Hello, hello. Welcome to the Basically Blind podcast. I'm Avery. First off, I just want to say thank you to everyone who has subscribed and reviewed and has helped spread the word about the podcast. I was really caught off guard by how many downloads I got this last week. And I'm really appreciative. So thank you so much. And I even apparently have some international listeners. So to everyone who's in France and Germany and Ireland, welcome, welcome, welcome. And thank you for being here. So like I talked about last week, this week, I'm not really talking about DE&I specifics. I am talking about me, just who I am outside of having a disability. A lot of the times, I think that people who have disabilities, that they'll hold back on telling people that they have one because they don't want to be defined by it, because they are a person with a disability and they're a person first. So I wanted to take today's podcast to kind of tell you a little bit about me outside of the fact that I have a visual impairment, just so that you can understand the experiences that I've gone through. And also it's a way for me to acknowledge the fact that I do recognize that I have privilege, that I was born with. I am white. I identify as a white, heterosexual, cisgendered female, which for anyone who doesn't know, I had to Google because people just started using the term cisgender without really explaining it and giving context. But cisgender means that you identify as being the gender that you were born as. So I was born female and I've always identified as being female. I've never had that feeling that I'm trapped in the wrong body or anything like that. And, you know, I'm all those things and I happen to have a disability. So we'll dive in. To be completely honest, this is my second time recording this podcast because I've been getting really tongue-tied because the amount of listeners that I got, it's made me a little nervous, because before I was just kind of talking to a microphone to no one, and now I know people are listening from all over. So please bear with me as I stumble through this. But yeah, here's a little bit about me. So I currently live in Seattle, Washington, in the United States. And, you know, you may know it as the home of Microsoft and Starbucks and where Grey's Anatomy is set. But, you know, I've lived in the Pacific Northwest my whole life. I grew up about 45 minutes south of Seattle in a small town called Edgewood. And I attended the Fife School District my entire life. So as I've mentioned in previous podcasts, I am an only child. So that meant that at an early age, I was taught to be very polite, and, you know, I was very conversational, and I learned very quickly how to entertain myself. I remember I did dress up all the time. I could play with my Barbies for just hours, which my parents probably loved, because anytime I was just locked up in my room playing by myself, that was time they got to themselves. And they could disagree with this, but I thought overall I was pretty good as a kid with entertaining myself. You know, I would ask them to play with me, but it was, I'd say 9 out of 10 times I was asking them to play an actual game with me. You know, I wasn't asking them to do tea party or anything like that. I think that the worst thing I ever put my dad through was, you know, sometimes you see on TV shows where the dad or the brother or someone has to dress up in like pearls and a floppy hat and do tea party. And my dad didn't have to do anything like that, but one of my favorite board games growing up was Pretty Pretty Princess, which, I mean, says a lot about me. But, you know, that meant I did force my father to put on costume jewelry and wear a tiara. But, who knows? Maybe he would have preferred the floppy hat. But at the same time, I didn't make him do it too often. And I appreciate him being a good sport about it. So I just remember when I was younger, I had a ton of energy. And we did have a yard, so I'd spend a good amount of time outside as well. So playing on the play set, or my dad had built me a playhouse, so I'd play out there, climbing trees, riding bikes, rollerblading, roller skating. And I read a ton. I remember I really wanted to learn to read and write. And once I did, I did it constantly. We would go on road trips in our RV when I was younger. And, you know, it's a lot of time just driving, which can be very boring for a kid. I mean, it can be really boring now, if I'm honest. But I'd have a huge stack of books and just read through them. So I was really into Boxcar Children. And there was this series that was called, I believe it was called the Bailey City School Kids or something like that. And the whole series was about this group of kids that they kept on, there was like supernatural phenomenons that like went on in their school. And so they had these fun titles like Vampires Don't Wear Polka Dots, or Werewolves Don't Lead Summer Camp, or Ghosts Don't Eat Potato Chips. And I loved those books and read a huge amount of that series. And so for me, and also something to note that I did is I was really, really crafty, and I was really into making jewelry at one point. I did Girl Scouts for years and years and years. And a lot of my hobbies remain the same until fifth grade, where there was a shift. And part of that had to do with me losing my vision. But the other shift is the fact that, you know, after fifth grade, that's when you go to middle school, and just the same things that you used to find interesting before, you weren't doing anymore. Like, obviously, like, I wasn't gonna be playing Barbies anymore or playing dress up. Well, I guess that's kind of a lie. I would spend a lot of time in my room, like, putting together different outfits now that I think about it. So I wasn't putting on costumes, but I was, I guess, in a way, playing dress up. But yeah, I went to middle school. Middle school was hard. Middle school was really hard for me. There was a period where I had pretty much no friends at one point. And then I had a very small group of friends that I built out from there. But my friends were spread out across a lot of different classes. And I was in the equivalent of our middle school honors program. And I really only had one friend in those core classes. And if you were in the honors program, it meant that there was three classes that you took with all the same people. So you pretty much had all your classes with these people, with the way that schedules would get arranged and everything. and so up until seventh grade, things were really hard. And then after having a conversation with my mom where I had said, like, you know, I don't feel like I have any friends. I've been feeling really lonely and really left out. I mean, she just kind of said the obvious to me. And at the time it seemed really harsh, but it was what I needed to hear. And she just said, well, then why don't you make more friends? Great idea, Mom. Wish I had thought of it. So it's exactly what I did. I consciously made the effort to try to reach out to people. And I mean, in middle school, people can be really clicky. So honestly, it's much easier said than done. I remember when I started trying to eat with different people and at lunch and make new friends that at first people were not super welcoming about it. But over time, they just kind of got used to me, I guess. And for me, you know, I was happy that I had more friends for sure. And it made school easier at that point. I also got teased, like not only in middle school, but I also got teased in high school, and it was for the polar opposite reasons at one point or another. But it didn't have to do with my vision at all, but it definitely had to do with my body. And when I was in sixth grade, I was really on the chubbier side. I had put on weight, but I hadn't grown upwards yet. And then that weight that I put on, I remained at that weight, but then shot up 7 inches by the time I graduated high school. So while in sixth grade, I was chubby. By the time I went to freshman year of high school, I was actually pretty thin. But I don't have a ton of shape to my body. Like, I'm, I guess, an athletic build where it's pretty straight, and I don't have a lot of hips. I don't have a lot of butt, and I definitely don't have a lot of boobs going on. And so while in middle school, I got teased by some people for being fat. Then on the flip side of it, I got teased in high school for being thin and not having curves. And, you know, it just goes to prove that there's no winning. Like, kids can be really cruel. If there's something that you can be teased about, you will be. But as I mentioned, I really wasn't teased about my vision, which is something that I'm very grateful for. And there was a girl who had, she also had visual impairments, and she was a few years older than me. So I never met her in person, but I had like created this, I think it was a MySpace group or something like that years later. And she ended up joining it, and she reached out to me, and we were kind of chatting, and she didn't have a great experience at my school. She was teased, and it resulted in her choosing to leave the school district and to go to the school for the blind and deaf down in Vancouver, Washington. So, you know, I acknowledge that I was very lucky to not have been teased about that, but it was still definitely hard. And I would say that middle school was definitely way harder than high school. I would definitely describe myself as someone who, I guess at this point, I would describe myself as a recovering perfectionist. I'm actively trying to not be a perfectionist, but in middle school and high school and through college, I definitely could be that way. And a lot of people would probably describe me as an overachiever, because I was the type of person that once I got to high school, I joined like every single club that there was. And not only did I join all the clubs, but I was on the leadership team. I was an officer in almost all of them as well. I didn't do a lot when it came to sports. Honestly, like, I'm not very coordinated. I did dance class when I was in kindergarten, and I was not good. I used to think I was. I really thought I was. And then I started thinking back on it, and it was a tap class and it was a ballet class, and I knew I wasn't good at tap. Most kindergartners, unless you're Shirley Temple, aren't good at tap. But I thought I was good at ballet. But then I started thinking about it, and a lot of the time in ballet class, I was usually like the one selected to, quote unquote, be the princess and stand in the middle, and then everyone else like dances around me. And I always thought that that meant that I was like really special and really good. And now I'm realizing that like I wasn't dancing and I was just standing in the middle. So it probably meant I was actually quite the opposite, and I was probably really bad. And I'm still honestly not a great dancer. I'm not very well coordinated. And in high school, I did try out for cheerleading, which I got cut from not once, but twice. And it was really devastating in the moment. And I had really wanted that. But I look back on it now and I'm just so thankful that I did get cut, because I wasn't good. I'm not a good dancer. I'm terrible at keeping rhythm. I would have embarrassed myself, hands down. So I can look back on that and not necessarily have regret. I have regret that maybe I should have stuck with some more dance lessons. I think that would have been beneficial across the board. I might have been a little bit more graceful than I am today. But yeah, I joined all those clubs and I did honors classes and I did all these things and I like to keep busy. But really, when I think about it, it was because deep down I was overcompensating, and I can recognize that now. Because I know that there were teachers and administrators that, since I had a disability, it would have in their eyes been just impressive for me to get through school and to graduate and not necessarily have gone to college. Just having graduated would have been an accomplishment in itself. You know, they didn't necessarily expect a lot from me. And I was never okay with that. And so I tried to do everything, and I tried to do it perfectly. And I mean, I missed 2 days of school. I missed 1 day of school after I got cut from the cheerleading squad the second time, because I was really upset. And my mom let me stay home, which was very wise of her. And the other time I missed school, I had gotten food poisoning from a chicken enchilada, which was a horrible experience. And you know, other than that, like I always tried to be really independent. And as I said, I tried to be perfect, but there were ways that I tried to rebel. And my mom had told me that she didn't want me having a job. She just wanted me focusing on school and doing good there. And so the way that I chose to rebel was by getting a job. Yeah, I know, like real rebel without a cause. I get it. But the thing that is shocking is that my first job was, I was a lifeguard. I'm not joking. That was my title. And they did ask me, they're like, would you be comfortable doing guard duty? And I just stared at them. I was like, would you be comfortable with me doing guard duty? Because no, like, I don't think people who are drowning are going to be down to play Marco Polo with me. So I didn't do guard duty, but I was more of a swim instructor, was a more accurate term for my job. And I was good at it and I enjoyed it, but it did get to a point where I wasn't enjoying it. And so, like partway through my senior year, I did leave that job. But it was the first job I ever had. And, you know, overall I have positive memories of it. And it's kind of crazy because, you know, when I was little, I hated swim lessons. I didn't want to get my head wet. And then I became the person that forced kids to get their head wet. So and there was a girl I remember. It was so weird. There was this little girl and she reminded me a lot of me when I was little. Like she looked similar to me and she had kind of some similar mannerisms. And she runs over to me and I was like, hi, I'm your swim teacher. What's your name? She's like, I'm Avery. And I was spooked because like now I'm teaching myself pretty much. And, you know, if she did something wrong, I had a hard time yelling at her because I felt like I was yelling at young me, but I did end up teaching her to like do her bobs and floats and stuff. And so I was much more successful with her than my swim teacher had been with me when I was in the preschool classes. So I guess I could pull from my experience as finding swim lessons traumatizing to help other kids, which was great. But, you know, I did learn early on that I knew I didn't necessarily want to be a teacher, but I knew I was good at teaching people and sharing information with them. And that's something that I think serves me well now with this podcast. So then once I graduated from high school, I went to Washington State University, which I think surprised a lot of people. Because something to know is that there are multiple state universities in Washington, but the two biggest ones are the University of Washington in Seattle and Washington State University in Pullman. And my parents both went to the University of Washington. I grew up touring the campus and visiting it, and you know, I had Husky apparel and all that stuff, and I really thought that I was going to go to UW. But I went on a campus tour to WSU, and Pullman is really in the middle of nowhere. It's legitimately in the middle of wheat fields. The whole town revolves around the campus and the university. And I originally was just going to use it as a backup school, as a safe school. But I went out for a campus tour, and I loved the campus. And the thing that really impressed me is that there were points where it was very obvious that me and my friend, as well as our parents, we were lost and we didn't know where we were supposed to go. And people would actively come up to us and be like, "Hey, can I help you? Like, where do you need to get to?" And everyone was just so friendly and nice. And that really impressed me. And so for me, it was really a toss-up on which school I would go to. In the end, I did go to Washington State University. I went to WSU, and part of it, if I'm honest, is I got waitlisted at UW, and I had been dealing with their administration. There had been something wrong with my application at first, where my transcript didn't get sent to them when I thought it was. And I had called trying to get everything figured out. And honestly, the administrative staff was incredibly rude to me. And it was a real turnoff. And so when I found out I was waitlisted, it wasn't even like, okay, well, I'll see if maybe I can get in. And I was just done at that point. I was like, you know, it's really close to home. It's just 45 minutes away. And you know, I want to make sure I have my own space. I had a lot of friends that were going to UW and from my high school. And there was a part of me that was aware that if I went to college with all the same people that I hung out with in high school, that I'd probably still be very similar and regulated to the person that I was in high school. And the other piece of it was I was really seriously considering going into a communications program. And WSU does have one of the best communication programs in the nation. So with all that, I made the decision to go to WSU. It was hands down the best decision for me. I definitely was able to come into my own. I was able to figure out who I was. I didn't feel like I was being held back by anyone who had known me previously and would be like, "Oh, that's not who you are. You're pretending to be someone else." Honestly, I think that I never pretended to be anyone else at WSU. I think I just finally figured out who I was. And when I went to WSU, I made the decision, since I didn't have a lot of friends that were over there, I made the decision to go Greek, and I joined a sorority. And That was a great experience. I will say that there were not very many people in Greek life that had disabilities, at least visible disabilities. I'm sure that there were plenty with invisible ones. So it kind of made me different, kind of made me stick out a bit. And but it was something that no one ever held against me. Everyone was just really kind to me. And again, I never felt teased, because of my low vision or anything like that. And I made wonderful friends through Greek Life, and a lot of those people are being so supportive of this podcast and sharing about it. And just, gosh, I just, you know, I love you guys so much. You're so wonderful. Thank you. And just the experience of having gone to WCU and gone through Greek Life and joined all the clubs and done all the things that I did, like, I wouldn't take it back at all. I will say that I was very, very much, I guess you could say, a goody two shoe in high school. I didn't go to parties. I didn't drink. I didn't do drugs. The first time I had ever gotten drunk was 1 week before high school graduation. And part of the reason that I did it was because I'd never been drunk before, and I figured getting drunk with a friend was probably going to be a lot smarter of a move than me first getting drunk at a frat party or a college party. I wanted to figure out what my limits were. And so, you know, I really didn't date, nothing. I that was not the case in college. I did drink in college. I definitely went out to parties. And I don't regret it. I felt like I ended up leaving there with a really good, well-rounded education, because I learned a lot in the classroom, but I'd argue I learned even more outside of it. I learned a lot of like social behavior and social cues that I didn't know before. Honestly, I didn't know how to chill at all. I was so high strung when I was in high school, and being in college and the years that have passed, I've calmed down a lot since then. And that just comes through life experience. But you know, I definitely got a lot of confidence when I went to college, because there were so many people that were like eager to be my friend, and guys that were interested in dating me, which that wasn't something I really had in high school. And, you know, I got recognized a fair amount. If I put myself out there, it usually, more often than not, it ended up positive for me. And I think I had to kind of tap into that when starting this podcast as well, reminding myself that, hey, like, you've put yourself out there before and it's really paid off. Like, I, you know, going Greek, that was putting myself out there. And I ran to be a fraternity sweetheart, and that was really intimidating to me. And I ended up getting that. And, you know, I loved the guys of that fraternity, and they were a really integral part of my college experience. And I was so rewarding for me to have done that. And, you know, I also, on a whim, because the way that it was structured was, for homecoming competitions on campus, if you had someone from your dorm, or if you had someone from your sorority or fraternity team that you were part of that ran for homecoming court, then you were given a certain amount of points for them applying, and for them winning, I believe, too, like however farther they progressed in the process. And so I put in an application just so my chapter could get points in homecoming. And that was terrifying, because you had to do a lot for it. Like, you had to do a talent. And I had been signed up for a Greek talent show my freshman year. And in front of the entire Greek community, I forgot the words to the song I was singing, and it was scarring. So to get up in front of people and sing again was really scary. And you had to do like a question round, and And then there was a level of campaigning, and I still don't know exactly how it happened to this day, but I won. And the thing that's even crazier is that the year after that, they decided that homecoming court was something that only served a small number of people. So at WSU, the Student Entertainment Board discontinued that tradition, which it was a bummer because it was a 60 plus year tradition that died. But because of it, I'm technically the last crowned homecoming queen of Washington State University. And I guess technically that means that I'm still homecoming queen. So the longest run probably of any homecoming queen ever. Someone contact Guinness World Records. I think I got one. You know, I don't know anyone who's been a homecoming queen for 12 going on 13 years, but here I am. So yeah, those were the kind of the main highlights from school, from college. I went on to study communications as I had planned. I always kept going back and forth on what I was going to do. For a while, I wanted to be a lawyer, and I even took the LSATs, or attempted to take the LSATs. And I can go all into that. The short version of it is that the accommodations that were provided, just they weren't enough, and so I really wasn't able to complete the test easily, and I ended up walking out of the exam without having completed it, because I just got so frustrated and knew that there was absolutely no way that I was going to be able to get a decent score on that test with how difficult it was for me to get through it. And as it turns out, I wasn't the only one that felt that way. And shortly after I had taken or attempted to take the LSATs, someone had filed a class action lawsuit against them and won. So I ended up getting a check in the mail because since I had applied for accommodations and during that time period that was cited, I was entitled to part of the settlement, which I did not anticipate, but I appreciated, since it does cost money to do prep courses and to register for the test. But I went between being a lawyer and just pursuing a career in public relations, or marketing in general. And I ended up going after the public relations side of things. And I had a few short contracts, and I did an internship, but at the time when I graduated, it was 2010, and the job market was still really bad, especially for marketing and PR jobs. And I couldn't find anything other than internships, really. And I'd already done around 4 internships at that point. So I actually made the decision to go back to school again, and I got a Bachelor of Science in Psychology. And originally the plan was that I was going to get the Bachelor of Science in psychology and then go to graduate school to be a counselor. But by the time I was done with my second degree, I was so burnt out on school and on social media. I guess I became a victim of FOMO in a way, because I kept seeing friends going on vacations and you know, the apartments and the places that they lived and just having adult lives. And I was still in school, and I wanted to join them. I wanted to catch up to where they were. So I decided to not do grad school, and I went back into marketing. And for me originally, the plan, and I can reflect back on it, and I don't really know where I kind of lost my way with it, but my original plan for going into PR was specifically I wanted to do PR, and I wanted to get a job to do PR for assistive technology at Microsoft. And it was so focused. And then with how hard it was to get jobs, it just turned into me taking whatever came my way and forgetting about that initial goal and just going from job to job just for, honestly, the sake of a paycheck. And once I came out of school, you know, it's much harder once you're out of school to make new friends. And so I was involved with a few alum-related organizations for my sorority. And then I also joined the Junior League of Seattle. And the Junior League of Seattle, it had such a big impact on me. Number one, I met amazing people. I have so many friends from there, and they're so supportive. And also, Junior League is really what turned me on to diversity, equity, and inclusion. They were very quick to adopt a stance on it and to create a task force that then turned into a committee. And they do tons of trainings around it. And, you know, I've developed trainings. I've been putting those on for the Junior League this past year. And I don't think if I hadn't joined that organization, I don't know if I would have discovered how much I care about this area. And, you know, once I got out of school, school's kind of this safe bubble, and it's an enclosed environment, especially WSU. Like, we all joke Pullman's just like this bubble that exists. And I definitely had moments where I had to advocate for myself and make sure that I wasn't being excluded from things. But overall, I never felt like there was a time where I couldn't do something. I could always find a way to do it. But after I graduated and I entered the workforce, that's definitely when, for the first time in my life, I started feeling very limited. And I started realizing that there's a lack of understanding about what accommodations are needed, and the fact that, you know, I can carry myself off a lot of the time. Like, I don't have any sort of a disability or visual impairment, and it throws people off. And so they don't realize just how bad my vision really is and how much stuff I really do need to do different to be successful. And because of that, it could be really difficult at times to get the accommodations that I needed. So overall, I really felt like through middle school and high school and college, I was able to have a positive outlook for the most part. When, as I talked about on my last podcast, the diagnosis, when I got the diagnosis when I was 21, 22, that the other half of my retina was failing, and now it was my entire retina and not just half of it, that was a point where I got very negative, and I wasn't great to be around. And it was very, I would say probably out of everyone besides myself, it was probably hardest on the guy I was dating at the time, because that's a hard thing to deal with. You don't know what to do in that situation. I was used to dealing with things like completely on my own. And he wanted to help, and I didn't know how to delegate appropriately. And so I was just used to a situation where it was either all on me or it wasn't on me. And I put too much on him. I definitely did. And I think that, like, that period of time, it ended up really kind of setting me up to not feel great for a while when it came to just myself and my self-esteem and just my career in general has been incredibly challenging. And I'll spend an entire podcast talking about that, because it's a long and winding road, but I am thankful that for what I have experienced, because it makes it so I am more passionate about trying to find equity for people, no matter what it is that makes them different, because I have had some really negative experiences, and I'm really fired up about not wanting other people to have to go through that as well. So that's kind of where I'm at now, where I landed. And I guess from a personality standpoint, if you were to know who I am, I can be very snarky. My husband says that I'm funny. I don't know if I'd go as far as to say funny. I think that I'm witty. My family says that I'm dramatic, but Cam says I'm really not that bad. I definitely can be dramatic, but I could be worse. I would say I am dramatic, but not a drama queen, if that makes sense. I'm very loyal to people that I feel have earned my loyalty. People that have time and time shown up for me, like I, you know, will stand by them and support them and do what I can. I feel that I'm a more empathetic person than probably the average person, just because of what I've gone through. There's been plenty of times where I know that I'll go to an event and I can tell that it just didn't dawn on the person to think about if someone with a disability or anything like that was attending, what would be needed for them to fully participate. And I think because of that, it makes me exercise putting myself in other people's shoes a lot more, because I know that people don't always do it for me. And it's made it so it's something that I actively do. And even when I get in arguments with people, I do try to see things from their perspective. I'm not always successful. I'm not always successful. And I also want to be really clear that with everything that I'm saying right now, I've made plenty of mistakes. I'm human, so I'm very flawed. I haven't always been as good about thinking about other people's perspectives when it comes to diversity, equity, inclusion. And even though it's something that I've faced with, I've made mistakes. I've done things that have made people feel left out or hurt. And so I'm not doing this podcast to speak down to anyone. It's more, here is my experience. And, you know, I'm also planning to bring on other people and have them share their experience as well, so that we can all learn from each other. Because, you know, we're all so much more in tune to the fact that we need to create a culture where everyone feels like they can excel. And that's not necessarily where we were at even, I'd say, 5 years ago. Even a year ago, things have shifted a lot from 1 year ago. But I would describe myself as a lifetime learner. I love just devouring books and doing research on, even if it's just like I'm buying a carpet cleaner, I do extensive research on making sure that I'm getting what's best for me. And I definitely can still have my overachiever tendencies, but I'll admit that the past year especially, but the past 5 years, it's just things have been so hard that I definitely hit a wall, and I've been incredibly burned out. I've had to like step back and take time for myself. And for me, having been for so long just such a doer and overachiever, having to step back and say no to things and to take a time out, that was really hard. But it is the best thing that I could have done for myself. I think I've been able to find a lot more clarity and focus over the past year of not only do what I want my career to look like, but just in general, what I want my life to look like. And I've also just examined how much, when I'm not feeling great, how much impacts the people around me, like my friends and Cam. And I mean, even my dog and cat, like they can pick up on when I'm not feeling great. And I can tell it impacts them too, which it sounds so silly, but I love them so much that it kills me to know that I'm bringing other people down. I'd say that while I definitely have moments where I can really be an asshole, overall, I have a good heart. I'm a pretty compassionate person. I describe myself as nostalgic, but not sentimental. Like I love watching stuff from like when I was in high school and college, and you know, I've been rewatching The Hills, and it's just such a throwback. It really takes me back. And I'll rewatch the TV series Greek that was originally on ABC Family, because it is dramatized. However, the main beats of it, like the social events and the Greek community politics and things like that, those actually are very accurate to what it was like to be in Greek life. So it really kind of takes me back, and I find it shows that I've watched a million times, like Grey's Anatomy. I find them strangely comforting. But at the same time, I do keep up on current pop culture as well. I'm kind of a junkie in that sense. And I'd say that there are a few things that people like really associate strongly with me. And one would be Kate Middleton. I love Kate Middleton. I used to not like her. And that was because from a very young age, I loved Prince William. So, you know, I didn't love that he was with Kate because that meant he couldn't be with me. I even like wrote this project in freshman year of high school where we had to write this like fictional report of like going somewhere in Washington. It was Washington State history, going somewhere in Washington on a trip and learning about it. And so in my report, I talked about how me and my husband, Prince William, we went to Orcas Island and stayed at Rosario Resort and Spa with our two beautiful children and had a wonderful time. And I actually, Cam took me to that same resort a few years back, and it was wonderful. I had a great time. We did New Year's there. I had a great time until I accidentally misstepped after midnight, and I really hurt my foot. I twisted my foot, and I got what they called like a midfoot sprain. And normally when that happens, it's like you kind of mess up like 1, 2, 3 tendons, and then it takes a while to heal. I screwed up 6, and I had to like get a boot and go to a podiatrist and get all this stuff figured out. Even with that happening, I was in excruciating pain, but even with that happening, I had a wonderful time. So, but in any case, yeah, like I loved Prince William. And so I guess I felt threatened by Kate. But then I started learning more and more about her. And the more I learned about her, the more I just loved her. Like I think she's just like the picture of class. I mean, it's part of the reason my dog is actually named George. His full name is Prince George, after the royal baby. It's true. And then the other things that are really strongly associated with me would be Josh Groban, Michael Bublé, and Grey's Anatomy. Like those would be the four things that when people see that, they think of me. And the other thing would be just really anything WSU related. Those would be the pieces that people see and they're like, oh, Avery, and they'll tag me in it or something like that. And so I guess I've done a really good job creating my own personal brand. And I'd say the other thing, not as strong now as it used to be, but the other thing was Blair Waldorf from Gossip Girl. Like people knew I was really into her. And so if there was stuff that popped up, they'd tag me in that as well. But not as much stuff these days because Gossip Girl came out a long time ago. Long enough that they're now rebooting it on HBO Max. But to be fair, it doesn't seem like stuff has to be gone that long for it to get rebooted these days. But yeah, I really hope that that gives you a better idea of just who I am. I guess another thing I could do is just describe my ideal Saturday. Let's do that. Number one, I would want to sleep in. I'm not a morning person. I wish I was, but I'm not. And then I would have brunch. I love brunch. I even have it listed on Facebook as my religion is brunch. I don't know what it is about it. Like, I don't know if it's the fact that you can have so many like tasty, boozy drinks and it's socially acceptable. And I love that. Or just it's a social event, or I have no idea, but I love brunch. Again, it's the basic side of me, how much I love it. And so then I'd say I'd go to brunch, and then I'd probably go for a nice long walk with Cam and George and on a nice sunny day. And then I'd say that if I could top it off with dinner at my favorite restaurant in Seattle, which is List, that would probably be my ideal day. Because, and if you haven't been to List, I mean, it's I believe it's closed right now. I don't know if they're doing takeout or not, but hands down the most delicious happy hour menu in the city. And you want to go for happy hour, because on happy hour, a vast majority of their entrees are half off. That's part of the reason I love it. They have this black truffle gnocchi that is the most sinfully delicious thing I've ever had in my life. And then they have a grilled octopus salad that I absolutely love. And then it's nothing's bad. I really haven't had anything bad there. A few things to note about just my lifestyle, I guess, is that as of like 2 years ago, I went pescatarian. So I don't eat meat. I eat seafood, but I don't eat chicken or pork or beef. And that was because I saw this TED Talk one time that talked about the environmental impact the meat industry had, and I felt so guilty that I after watching it instantly stopped eating meat. And to be 100% clear, I judge no one who chooses to still eat it. This was a personal choice for me. My husband still eats meat, and you know, I to each their own. This is a choice that I made for myself. I'm not going to tell anyone horror stories. And if you want to continue to eat meat, just don't try to find that TED Talk, because it may make you feel bad. I try to be pretty eco-conscious in general, and like buy non-toxic cleaning products. And I mean, one thing to know is just I live in Seattle. Seattle is a very liberal, kind of more, I guess, new agey, you could say, in a way. We're definitely like more environmentally aware than I think a lot of places. And so I think it's just something that's built into me as a product of living in this area. And it's a very socially conscious city. So, I mean, my husband and I, we've gone to a few different cities and traveled around. And anytime I go somewhere, I try to decide, like, is this just a place I want to visit, or would I want to live here? And the closest I came to a place that I would want to live outside of Seattle was I visited Chicago, and I absolutely loved it. It felt incredibly accessible, and the giant buildings and everything about it, I just loved. The only thing that I can't do is the extreme weather. I don't think I'd be able to handle the really cold winters, which I experienced those in college, but Chicago's a whole new level, and I know that. And the really, really hot summers. The temperature in Seattle has spoiled me to the point that I don't know if I can go anywhere. And some people might be like, oh, the weather in Seattle is terrible. The weather isn't great. The summers are gorgeous. The summers are beautiful. It has been an incredibly rainy winter this year, and it's been really gray. But specifically what I'm talking about is just the temperature. The temperatures are really mild. And honestly, for me, as someone who's incredibly light sensitive, the fact that it's always cloudy, it's a perk. It's a perk. It kind of, I have this whole theory as to like, maybe I'm actually a vampire. I don't know, because, you know, I can't see my reflection easily in the mirror. And if I go into the sun, like I pretty much burst into flames, like I'm incredibly fair skinned and I burn very easily. So I prefer to live in places with cloud cover and not too much sun. And also, like, I have an extreme sensitivity to garlic. Like, if I eat garlic, it lingers, it haunts me for 48 hours, even if it's not too much. I don't know what the case is with that, but yeah, so I don't know, like, blind or vampire, like, you make the choice. Plus, I mean, Twilight was set in this area, so there's fictional precedent, at least. But yeah, that's a lot about like how I live and about me. So I think that's a really good snapshot. We are going to start shifting away from just talking about me, because that's boring. I'm not just going to talk about me. I will continue to bring in my experiences and stuff, but I'm going to actually this next podcast, we're going to shift into talking about some terminology, specifically the words diversity, equity, and inclusion. They're used really interchangeably, but actually each word does have a very different meaning. So I'm going to speak on that and, pull some content that I've put trainings together. So I will have a number of podcasts that go over some of the content that I do in my trainings. So that we're able to kind of just all better ourselves and learn more. So once again, I really want to thank everyone who has subscribed to the podcast, everyone who's left a review in the Apple podcast store. I appreciate it so much. If you haven't left a review, please go to specifically the Apple podcast app and leave a 5-star review. And you can access podcasts on really any Mac device that you have. It will say podcast. You go in there, just look up Basically Blind, and then you can leave a review. I mean, if you absolutely hate it, like, I appreciate you just like stop listening and not leave a 1-star review. Because the reviews are one of the best ways to get discovered, and this is a brand new podcast. So I really would appreciate any help in spreading the word. Make sure that you subscribe to the podcast so that they drop into your feed, and you really can subscribe pretty much on any platform that you have now. It should be available in really anywhere that you listen to podcasts. But just thank you to everyone. It's been a really, the last few years have been really hard for me, and I've had a number of things that have made me feel like I haven't gotten many wins in a long time. And so the fact that I created this passion project, and it's really been incredibly well received and been so much more successful out of the gate than I thought it would be. I can't express how much that means to me and how much of a difference that makes for me. So thank you. And, I'll see you next time. Bye.